Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Morning there, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
You know, I am really all into the whole Christmas spirit and stuff. Well, I went over to my mom's house last night and decorated her tree.
Yeah.
I'm feeling in a benevolent mood. But the thing that really gets me down about the holiday season is you really can't be mean to people like I normally am. So what I've decided to do is bring to this show a few things to make fun of, because I haven't been able to do that around the holidays.
There's plenty to make fun of out there, that's for sure.
First is the stupid products that come available around the holidays. I love this show when we talk about the dumb things that are out on the market.
Every year it amazes me about the s'mores maker or the chocolate fountain or the...
Here's the deal.
You know, the craziness that we all go out and buy the millions.
Here's the thing we're going to do, though. This is why it's fair. We're going to give the website of this dumb thing, and if you know a dumb person, you buy them for Christmas. Now here's the thing. It's a gimmick. There's something about wine, because there's a mystique about wine where people come up with gadgets and I don't know things that don't make any sense.
I'm going to tell you, but it's the same thing about golf or anything that people are really into that somebody else may not be really into, that they're trying
to don't know as well.
The idea is to coax someone who doesn't know that much about it to buy something because they want to buy a gift for the wine lover or the golfer.
Well,
and so all of a sudden, you know, there people are buying, you know, the thing that measures the distance to the flag with your little eye monocle, or it's the same in any kind of...
Uh-oh.
What's the matter?
Well, that's all I got you for Christmas. Sorry. Okay. I'll be returning that after the show. Here's the thing. Here's the wine thing that came out this year. It was featured in the Star Ledger last week, and it's actually its own website. It's a wine whisk. What you say is a wine whisk? A wine whisk is basically... Now, here's the deal. With wine, some wines benefit from being aerated a little bit, being allowed to, the old word was, you know, breathe. Now, when you pull the cork out of a bottle of wine, so let it breathe for 15 minutes. If you just pull the cork out and you let it sit on the counter, it doesn't really breathe very much because there's very little air in there.
No,
it's a little, you got, you know, a quarter inch little circle of wine exposed to the air, and that's at the bottom of a big long chimney. Nothing much is happening.
So there are a lot of products out there that feign they can add air.
Here's the reality. If you're going to pour this wine right away, you basically pour half the bottle into four glasses. It's sitting in your glass. You can let it just sit in your glass for 20 mm-hmm. minutes or
especially
half an hour.
Have nice big glasses.
And, you know, and it decants that way. It sits in the air that way. But sitting in the bottle is not going to do a thing. The way wines are often done is decanted. We decant a lot of red wines in Stage Left, which means you take it and you pour it from the bottle into a glass container. It should be a container, if you're decanting, to let the wine breathe, that you don't fill all the way to the top. It fills about halfway. There's lots of surface area exposed to the oxygen. And the wine can, especially a young wine, can mellow. You have to be careful. Not all wines are worth decanting. But if you want to play with this at home.
Or meant to be decanted. Some wines just...
And older wines can be fragile mm-hmm. and you can sort of
exactly.
like,
you know,
half an hour later
things.
They're not so nice. But what you do is you open the bottle of wine, pour it into a decanter, and taste it as soon as you pour it in, and mm-hmm. then, you know, taste it 10 or 15 minutes later, taste it half an hour later, and it's a fun little experiment for you to do at home. And you can see how wine changes over time. Some wines that are traditional older wines will drop sediment in the bottom. They drop little particulates in the bottom of the bottle. So the other reason to decant is if you have an old wine, you might want to decant it off the sediment, so you get a clear
wine.
So
all that kind of murky stuff at the bottom stays out of your glass.
If you want to aerate your wine, I've just told you the two ways to do it. But a woman named Lisa Clement has invented a wine whisk. Now, the way this is, what this is basically, it's a whisk, a little tiny whisk that you are supposed to, I guess, give your guests, and then they pour you a glass of wine, and you take the whisk, and you're supposed to stir your glass of wine with the whisk.
Uh-oh.
Cut that out. Okay. First of all,
guess I have to return that gift for you for Christmas.
It's as ridiculous as it seems. If you come over my house and I pour you a glass of wine, do not whisk the wine. Okay. I'm not really that fussy, but I mean, don't whisk the wine. And what it is, but what's fun, it's $20.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little whisk about 4 inches long.
We need to talk about something else too. If your wine actually did have sediment in it and you actually got some in the bottom of your bottle, then basically instead of it dropping to the bottom of your decanter, which it would eventually do, you're kind of whisking it all together and putting all that cloudiness into your wine.
Whisks are for omelets. You know? I mean, they're also there's in older wines that you know benefit from aeration. There are some. There are some things that go on in that wine that there are also delicate compounds that form as a wine ages.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, when they say store wine, you want to store it in a vibration-free place.
Right, exactly.
Because you can break up those long molecules that give wine a lot of flavor and character. Okay, but what I object to is not just that this is stupid and you don't whisk your glass of wine when someone pours it. I wonder, are you supposed to carry it in your pocket? So that, like, if your host pours it for you, you whisk your wine, but everyone else's wine doesn't get whisked? That sounds kind of rude. But here's the other thing that I object to. First of all, it's somebody who knows nothing about wine. The second thing that I object to about it is it's $20, right? And it's a whisk. Okay, so I could pick you up a whisk that size in Chinatown.
For about $6.
No, $1.75. $1.75. The shiny chrome one will be $3. And, you know, it's just crazily gullible. Here's the other thing. If you go to wine, if you don't believe me and you're thinking, that Francis is an idiot, I'm getting that for Cousin Bob, you can go to winewhisk.com. I told you I'd be fair. And spend $20. Or you know what? Send me $20. I'll send you a little whisk. All right? How's that? I'll send you a little whisk. Francis@restaurantguysradio.com. Winewhisk.com. Also, Lisa Clement is the inventor of this thing.
Of the whisk.
She has designed the special whisk, which she has trademarked. So I can't send you a wine whisk. I will simply be able to send you an identical whisk.
A whisk.
Which you can use for wine. I just can't call it a wine whisk. And what else? She also is the creator of bead sprouts, that also trademarked.
I just had a great idea.
What?
Beer whisk.
Beer whisk? Now you get all the bubbles out.
Whiskey whisk.
No.
Whisk, how's that? Well, I'll get you the whisky
but
whisk.
But you don't aerate whiskey.
But you don't whisk wine either. So
yeah. Okay.
It's right on the same level.
Here is her other companies. It's just revolutionizing wine consumption in America. She's the creator of bead sprouts. She extended the decorative bead concept to her enthusiasm for wine and wine sprouts, a bottle stopper with a whimsical spray of beads sprouting from their tops. And now your open bottles look great on the table or on the kitchen counter.
Much like your 1970s living room looks great with the beaded curtains.
Or my 10-year-old niece with the beads that she puts on her sweatshirt. I don't understand that. I really, really don't understand that.
So we can bedazzle your wine.
Yeah, well, you know what? When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about your family's tradition.
Yes,
which
we are.
Is Robert Tunnell is going to join us again. We had him on last Christmas. He has a book. He's a comic book author and illustrator. His book is The Feast of the Seven Fishes. It's about a holiday gathering that surrounds the Feast of the Seven Fishes, which I've had at your family's house on Thanksgiving. And I think they're going to. I heard they're going to make it into a movie. So we're going to ask him about that in just a moment. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We welcome back today Robert Tunnell. He's a comic and graphic novel writer who has been a director in Hollywood. His book, The Feast of the Seven Fishes, is a wonderful book we talked about last year, and great things have been happening to him this year.
Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Have you been? We should rehash this a little bit. Basically, this is a comic book series that pretty much is My Big Fat Italian Wedding meets Christmas Eve.
I would say that's probably good. With probably a lot more alcohol.
Can I tell you, though, but I bet you're not considering that as the title for the movie.
I can say that. Yeah, absolutely.
We talked about this the last time you were on the show, but Basically, this is a comic book about Christmas Eve. It's about the Italian culture, the American Italian culture of Christmas Eve, which obviously has strong roots to me. But what I especially like, I mean, when you talk about touching somebody directly, you know, I have a WASP wife who's basically their family. The four of them sit home on Christmas Eve and share Christmas Eve together in this quiet tradition. And she comes to my house and there's 50 people over for Christmas Eve, and it's a big party and people are wandering in and out of the house all day. Some of the people I don't even know.
Well, you know, and it's a celebration, and a true celebration. And you know what's really so great about it is that, you know, in an era when I'm scared that, like, kids' memories of Christmas are going to be, and then there was this great blue light special that we went to.
Yeah.
And then one time we heard a choir at the mall, you know, and it's like, well, what about actual physical Christmas itself doing something? You know, we, you know, Italian Americans, we get it on.
Yeah, that's true.
We Irish Americans do things too. We often don't remember the next day. We just do it without the food. It's like the feast of the seven potatoes and a bunch of beer. No, that's not really true.
I was going to say, a seven-course meal, there was a six-pack of Guinness and a potato.
Now, I have to tell you, remember, I can be self-deprecating, but you guys can't mock on
me.
Yeah,
no, we can mock on you. Sure we can.
Listen, can I tell you what, though? I just did over a week's book tour with this book everywhere from Cleveland to, you know, to up to New York and North Jersey. And I know all about deprecation at this point. Plenty of people.
Well, you know, the one of the things this talks about is, I mean, why don't you guys, for those in the audience who don't know what the Feast of the Seven Fishes is, what is the Feast of the Seven Fishes, and why seven fishes, and what's the premise of the book? We're taking it for granted because we know. But
right. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, you know, it's I wish I could say that I knew where and when it was born, but its roots are in the Catholic Church, and it was a way to break the fast on Christmas Eve in preparation for the Mass, or in some families like ours, after the Mass, a meatless dinner. And it, from there, you know, it evolved into just, like you said, I mean, I said being on the tour the last week, I've heard more crazy stories of what people do. They go out, they rent halls so they can have 150 people, and just have so many marvelous dishes, things my family never even considered that I'm absolutely thinking about trying now.
Well, now
it's a wonderful thing.
Now, isn't there also some a dispute about the number of fishes? Don't some people do different numbers of fishes?
3, 5, 7, 9, 13. I know a family that does absolutely do 13.
Mostly in my family, it was 7, and most of the people I knew, it was 7. But yeah. I've gotten probably 4 different answers as to why it should be 7 fishes from my own family members.
Yeah, 7 sacraments, I'm always told.
Yeah.
Ah, there you
but
go.
That's the reason why. And 3 would be the Trinity. You know, I mean, there's just, yeah, I can't speak with any authority, but the good news is I'm not sure there's anybody. They have to go back, I think, to the 15th or 16th century, I believe.
So, you were writing horror comic books, you were acting in films, you were directing in films. What makes you write a comic book about the seven fishes and this Italian Christmas Eve tradition?
You know, I love the tradition, and I thought it was a great background for a romantic comedy, a little fish out of water sort of romantic comedy. And, you know, what I loved was, you know, I pitched it to my manager, and he told me I was an idiot. It was a stupid idea. Nobody would ever want to read it, let alone make a movie. And, you know, of course, we start shooting the movie in 6 weeks, and he's no longer my manager.
So,
I'm actually driving to a meeting with the assistant director in Pittsburgh. We're and all day tomorrow wrapping up location scouting. So I'm seriously shooting the movie.
So when do we hope the movie comes out?
It should be coming out around Thanksgiving of next year.
Oh, that's great.
That's tremendous. Now,
yeah, it's really pretty exciting.
What kind of release is it going to get?
As wide as possible. I mean, I got to do a good job on the movie. So, but
are you directing it?
Yes, I am.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. This has been the most homegrown project ever. And, you know, I keep saying, like, the book runs me. I don't run the book, you know? I mean, I look back to when it was nominated for the Eisner Award for Best Graphic Novel, which is like the, or Best Graphic Album, they technically call it, which is like the, you know, that's the Oscar of comics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knew? You know, this obscure little online comic, and then it becomes such a successful book. It's been crazy.
Well, let me talk about the fact of this book, and you can pick it up. You can find out how to get it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. It makes a great Christmas gift or a great Christmas read before Christmas. But one of the things you've really tapped into here that is that a lot of books do is you know, it's a book with recipes, and you're seeing more and more, you know, cookbooks that have stories, and you're seeing more and more books that have recipes. How did you select the recipes that went in here? Are these your family's recipes?
We went family and regionally, and it, you know, if anything, I wish I'd even gone bigger, and it's something that I hope to remedy at some point in the future, or in the, I'm actually scripting the sequel now as a straight up novel. I'm going to incorporate, I hope, a lot more recipes in breakfast and text. I think it's helpful in that.
Actually, you know what, Robert, we're breaking up on your cell phone a little bit. We're going to take a short break, and we'll come right back to you with Robert Tunnell. The book is The Feast of the Seven Fishes. We'll be back in just a moment with the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagat and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're speaking with Robert Tunnell about his book, The Feast of the Seven Fishes, which is about to be being written into a novel as we speak, and filming starts on the movie just shortly. So what part does Mark play in this? What are you considering him for?
The angry sous chef.
Can I tell you, one of the things in the book I love is the wasp girl in the book has like a boyfriend / ex-boyfriend, and his name is Prentice. And I was like, that's awesome, because I come from a town of Marios and Anthonys and Gennaros, and my family was rebels because they named me Mark with a K. Like, that was their big, like, answer to, you know, we're gonna step outside the box.
How's your
family? I probably pushed the wasp stereotype a bit there.
Well, it's all for comedy.
Listen, I married a wasp. Not so much. Okay? My kid's name is Spencer.
You know, I never really thought that through. So how does your family feel about the book? Is this autobiographical, man?
It is to an extent. I mean, I certainly was never as sensitive as Tony. And, in fact, I ran into my college ex's sister at the Feast of Seven Fishes Festival, which, incidentally, my hometown now has a festival that was born from the book and the feast.
That's phenomenal.
Marvelous event. She was talking. She said, yeah, I love the book. And I said, yeah, you know, it's... I was just trying to put it out. I said, you know, it's not autobiographical. It's really fictional. She said, hey, Bob, there's nobody reads that book and thinks you're Tony. Way too sensitive. Way too nice a guy.
So,
okay, good.
So what is your hometown that there is now a whole festival around the Feast of the Seven Fishes prompted by their favorite son's book?
I'm actually calling the county seat of Fairmont that. Reevesville, which is a little town just outside of Fairmont, was where the story kind of fictionally takes place, a neighborhood called Greentown.
In what?
But in our hometown, and you can see pictures from all this, by the way, at sevenfishesblog.com. You can see video of the festival and everything. It's in its second year, had about 5,000 people.
And what is your hometown? You know, what state?
Fairmont, West Virginia.
Oh, I see.
Packed with Italians. And it was a week ago last Saturday, and it was just incredible. Just great food. I mean, you know, once again, the smelt sold out.
Yeah.
There's some smelt-eating people, let me tell you.
Hey, listen, you know, everybody flocks to us. You know, the Italians, we have the best food. So everybody flocks to us and wants to hear our story.
I have to say, growing up as an Irish kid in a town that was about a third Irish and a third Italian, all the smart Irish kids went over to the Italian kids' house for dinner. That was just how it worked. Hey, man, we got to leave it there. Thanks so much, Robert, for coming back on the show. We'll direct everybody to your book.
Hey, guys, thank you so much.
Thanks, Robert.
It's The Feast of the Seven Fishes, a collected comic strip and holiday book. You can find it at restaurantguysradio.com. 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Bring Don in. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're welcoming in the second half of the show a return visit from a prior guest, a gentleman named Don Harris. He's the owner of La Tienda Importers. He is the instrumental importer of the famous and coveted Jamón Ibérico, which has arrived in our shores for the first time this month. We had him on the show 2 years ago when the first Jamón Ibéricos were approved, but it takes about 2 years to make a Jamón Ibérico. And now we're back for the celebratory return of Don Harris.
Don, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot.
Well, you finally done it, sir.
Your hams have arrived.
Yeah, it's really amazing. The process really goes back till 1997 when we first were talking to producers over there, and they said that it was not possible to import these hams to the U.S.
Why don't you tell people why that was, Don?
Well, the pigs are they're a special kind of pig, which is a free-range, semi-wild pig. But on top of that, they're dependent on acorns from either cork or holm oak trees, which live in a sort of a meadow pasture forest situation, which is rapidly disappearing. So they told us at the time that there were not enough pigs, and they couldn't grow more pigs because there were not enough acorns.
Well, but also at the time, you couldn't import that Spanish meat directly into the United States. The government authorities wouldn't allow it, right? Why was that?
Yeah, that's for all Spanish meat at the time. And because the Food and Drug Administration has elaborate requirements to approve a slaughterhouse, and the Spaniards essentially didn't want to bother going through all the red tape. It's not a matter of health reasons. It's just that we want to track everything from the beginning all the way through with record keeping. And
well, so
a lot
now,
of people didn't want to bother.
How did you get the Spanish producers to agree to sell us some of these pigs?
Especially when they were selling all the pigs that they had.
And the U.S. government to allow them to come through.
Well, there are a lot of people involved in this process. We're involved, and I guess where we particularly were effective is that we put together a list of around 400 people who put $200 down so that they could get one of these hams.
Mm-hmm.
So then we could go to the producers and say, look, it's not a matter of the market because you do it, and here's a purchase order for, you know, $500,000.
Right.
All right. Secondly, however, there are other people involved. Jose Andres, the restaurateur in Washington. Mm-hmm. Do you know him?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and he was anxious to get things going, too. And so he was also contacted. We both of us found out that Santiago Martin of Fermin Jamón was wanting to bring it in. He came to the U.S. He came to New York and then to Washington. We met him there. Jose Andres did.
Well, any great chef, I think, or restaurateur who's been to Spain would have loved to be able to serve Jamón Ibérico here in the United States.
I spent a lot of time in Spain, and I'll tell you, the thing about Jamón Ibérico, when you order it in a sidewalk cafe or in a restaurant, and they're crazy about ham in most parts of Spain, but when you order a plate of ham as a tapa or as an appetizer.
You mean crazy good.
Yeah, crazy good. but when you order a plate of ham as a tapa or as an appetizer, it comes out, and you know, the Jamón Ibérico, if it's offered, and it usually is maybe two or three times the price of the next best ham. Well, you can tell when someone orders the jamón ibérico because as the plate of ham comes out of the kitchen, it's a different color, it's shiny, and it has nothing on it, and it's just perfect. Why is it so different? What makes jamón ibérico so different? How does it taste so differently? I mean, obviously, I know the answer, and we have one on the way, but talk to me
about
it.
Well, I would say a couple of – I think when they're served, they glisten because – at least for the bellota, which is the best of the Iberico, it's 60% monounsaturated fat, which melts at 70 degrees. So when you're serving the ham, the fat is already liquid.
So now it's 60% monounsaturated fat as opposed to in a normal ham. What is the fat?
Well, normal white ham, white pig ham, has none.
Mm-hmm.
The jamón Iberico, which has not been given a huge diet of acorns at the end, has around 20% monounsaturated.
Now, and this is good. This is a good kind of fat for you, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's like olive oil.
Tell us the difference. Now, there are a couple of things that we've talked about here that we need to clarify for everybody. Jamón Ibérico, which has just become available in this country, is tell us the difference between a Jamón Ibérico and Jamón Ibérico de Bellota.
Okay, very important and confusing. Simply put, it's the same pig. It's the same strain, which is this ancient strain which goes all the way back to caveman times.
The strain is called pata negra or black-footed pigs.
Well, that's the slang. It's a cerdo ibérico.
Right, that's why we use the slang.
Yeah, but the important thing here, it's ibérico.
Right.
Now, there are some merchants out there who are selling something called Iberian ham.
Mm.
Well, Iberian just means Spanish.
Or Portuguese, not even specific.
That's right, or Portuguese. So it's Iberico.
Jamón Ibérico.
Right. Now, if the pigs are fortunate enough to be born in the spring and early summer, then they are about reaching their maturity when the acorns are coming in profusion. So what they do is they give these pigs special rights to, I hate to say this, but pig out on acorns for 5 months, and they gain around a kilo, 2 pounds a day.
And that's wow. And that's just basically for the pigs that are born in that one small period. Yeah, window.
That's right. And the other ones run around too. 95% of them are free range, and they get some acorns, but they don't have.
So the
they don't have the ice cream store.
So the bellota hams, which eat on acorns, it changes the nature of their body fat to where the fat in the finished ham is now 60% monounsaturated fats. It melts at room temperature, changes the texture of the ham. There's no ham in the world that tastes like a bellota ham.
That's right.
Now we have. We're getting recently, you know, just this month we had the first jamón ibéricos in the country, and the first bellota hams will be available when?
We hope in July.
Well, now since we're one of those people who put down our $200 ham, we got a couple of hams coming in July. We're going to be among the first in the country to get these, right?
That's right.
Well, so you can try those in July, but we'll have the regular jamón ibérico. We'll get ours at the end of this month. Now, we have...
No, you just said something that you said regular jamón ibérico, right. Like it's like it's the, you know, the everyday ham. You know,
one of
just
the best hams in the world, as a matter of fact. But we're going to be getting that, and we're going to talk to you about... And you can find it in very few places around, and it's quite pricey, but it's also really special stuff. And we're going to talk more with Don Harris, who's responsible for bringing it into the country. More in just a moment. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. 1450 WCTC. It's 11:45.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by-the-glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work. Until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years' experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Don Harris, the owner of La Tienda. You can go to latienda.com. I think you can still get delivery in time for Christmas if you hurry. There's great Spanish stuff of all types, but we're talking about this one special ham that Don's brought into the country called jamón ibérico. Now, one of the things about jamón ibérico, by the way, jamón ibérico is one of the finest hams in the world. We'll have one by New Year's. We'll have the jamón ibérico, and then come July, we're going to be one of the first places in the country. We're going to do a dinner with
around the Bolota ham.
Bolota jamón ibérico. Now, this stuff isn't cheap. I mean, it's being written about all over the country, by the way, Dom. Congratulations. I mean, 2 years ago, it was just the restaurant guys singing your praises. Now it's New York Times and everybody else. I hope. Just remember Just remember where you came from. That's all I want to say.
That's right. Well, one thing I want to clarify, though, we are not specifically responsible for bringing it over. It was Fermin USA.
Yes.
And Santiago Fermin, the Spaniard, is really the wise person, because when all the other Spaniards didn't want to bother with us, he went through all the hoops and he got it here.
But you were the thorn in his side that helped him get it over. You're the thorn in his side. Now,
the acorn in his shoe, as it were.
Now, this ham for the jamón ibérico, if you were to buy it retail, the prices that I'm seeing out there, and of course we sell it in the restaurant, but the price that I'm seeing for the jamón ibérico is $50 a pound. It seems to be where the prices landed.
We're selling it online at tienda.com at $52 a pound for bone-in.
But that's buying a whole ham. That's not
that's
going out and getting a pound of ham. So it's going to cost you more if you go out and buy yourself a little pound of ham. Now,
yes.
Now that's $52 a pound bone in, so that means you're paying for the bone in there as well, which
yeah, you can get a bone less, but it costs $87 a pound, so it costs the same.
Now, the thing is, by the way, you make a heck of a soup out of that bone, though.
That's right.
Now, what's the difference between a bone in and a boneless ham? I mean, aside from the obvious that one doesn't have a bone.
I think Francis saw the expression on my face after he asked that question.
Do you find a difference in flavor?
No, it's the same ham. There's a man that sits there and takes out the bone. The difference, practical difference, is that if you're carving it off, slivers off the ham on a ham stand, that's one thing, and tastes very good, and there's a certain ceremonial aspect to it.
Don, in my adult life, I can't do a ham stand anymore.
Oh, awful.
Sorry. Never mind. Keep going.
No. Okay. On the other hand, the boneless is something which, if you're not skilled with carving, you're going to have less waste, obviously,
because mm-hmm. right.
it's all ham.
Now, go ahead.
But for a lot of people, the whole thing with the bone in and the black hoof is all very cool.
Well, now you just said hoof, and a lot of our guests on the radio were like hoof. He said hoof. If you go into places that are really into ham, a lot of them in Europe and definitely in Spain, the hams are almost always come with the bone on all the way down to the hoof. The whole bone is left down to the hoof, and that ham is and all the hams are dried that way. And
right.
the way the ham is sorted, it's often hung. I would go into restaurants in Spain once in a while. There'd be a lot of hams hung on the ceiling, hoof down. And when they run out of what I like in the old restaurants in Spain was that back when smoking was really popular, you know, it'd be extra
right.
smoked by being under everybody's cigarettes, a little layer of nicotine on the outside. I'm sure that wasn't very good, but we don't do that. But in a Spanish household, you would go around the holiday time, and often there'd be a ham. They'd put it on a ham stand with the hoof sort of sticking up in the air, and have a very sharp knife next to it where you can cut. And I was in many people's homes where that ham would just sit on the kitchen table throughout the holiday season, anybody, you know, because it doesn't need to be refrigerated, with a piece of cheesecloth over it. And when you're walking through the kitchen and you want to have a piece of ham, you take the cheesecloth off, slice a couple of pieces of ham, and put the cheesecloth back on. Is that a traditional way to have this ham?
Yeah, either cheesecloth or a slice of the fat. You just put it on. So the whole thing is to keep it moist, because if you don't cut it for a couple of days, then it starts drying out.
Not really a factor in my house, Tom.
No, I don't think it would be a factor. The other thing, though, they hang it hoof up,
mm-hmm.
and then they have a little cup at the bottom, sort of like an inverted, what do you call it?
Just a cup.
Umbrella sort uh-huh. of thing. And that captures the fat, because, you know, a lot of fat goes out while it's being hung.
Melts away, sure.
And an interesting item I read is that over in England, they're now collecting the Iberico fat, because it used to be that goose fat was the best for baking.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've but some of the goose fat was not available because of the fear about bird flu.
Mm-hmm.
So now they shifted to Iberico lard.
Wow, that's wild.
Well, I mean, my family used pork lard all the time. Makes back in the sense. In the 40s and 50s to bake with, all the time.
Makes perfect sense. Now, the Bellotta hams, when they come out, they're looking to be about twice as expensive as the Iberico hams. Is that correct?
That's right.
So you're talking about hams, if you buy a boneless ham, you're talking about $160 a pound?
A bone in would be 96, and a bone, what we're selling, they may sell it more elsewhere.
Right.
96, and then 162 a pound bone less.
Now, that's to buy the whole ham, and I'll tell you that, first of all, I totally think these hams are completely worth it, but you're talking about, when you buy the whole ham, we're buying a $1,000 ham, you know?
That's right.
And basically,
We hope, La Tienda hopes to be able to slice some of this
uh-huh.
beforehand, so that people, normal human beings, can have a pouch of a few slices and see what it tastes like.
At Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, we're going to slice it for you all the time, except for the bits that Mark and I take home. You can't have those. We'll be back in just a moment with Don Harris. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Don Harris of La Tienda and latienda.com, importers of the famous Jamón Ibérico.
Don, these hams that you have are basically sold out. Now, we have a lot of consumers at home who have big family parties. We have a lot of restaurant owners who listen to the show and chefs who listen to the show. How do they get on the list? How do they get in line to get into the next batch of Jamón Ibérico?
Well, they can go online with us and just put down a $200 deposit, and they go on the list, and people are provided first come, first serve.
And basically, what's the waiting time now for a ham?
Well, it's not that bad, because there are some more being flown over now. We think another batch is being flown, and then a ship will be coming. So I think the waiting time is maybe a couple of weeks.
No, wow, that's great. That's better than 2 years.
No,
yes.
we put our $200 down 2 years ago, and we're thrilled to do so. But we put ours down the Bellotta ham, especially, which is coming in July. Maybe, Don, you'll come back and talk with us again before the Iber or when the other hams arrive.
Sure.
And if you want to try this stuff, we're going to have ours by New Year's Eve, and it'll be available at Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left on
we'll
New Year's Eve.
We'll have a special Jamón Ibérico.
Check it on out.
On both New Year's Eve menus for you.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Don, when you're in town, if you're around this area, you have to come by, and we'll wow you with what exactly we do with this great ham when we get our hands on it.
Okay, that'll be great.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Don.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. You can find Don Harris. You can find out more about Don Harris and his company, latienda.com, latienda.com online. You can get shipping in time for the holidays. If you just read about the Jamón Ibérico, though, it's an amazing story. It's exactly the kind of food that we believe in. Sadly, it's very expensive, but it's the kind of thing where, you know, you don't need a pound of, you know. You don't
right, you're not going to eat a pound of jamon ibérico anyway. You're going to eat an ounce or 2 ounces, and, you know, that's 15, that, you know, $8, $15. It's not that
right.
much.
And you're not going to actually make a ham and cheese sandwich for your kid and put it in a lunchbox with a jamon ibérico. And I love the idea of having that whole leg bone in on the kitchen counter. It's just so old world is wonderful. Anyway, thanks so much for listening to The Restaurant Guys. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.